Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. I'm here. Oh, been so very excited. It's been a couple weeks, and I'm here with my co-host, Carol
Peterson.
And guess what? We have a phenomenal guest. This is going to be a hot conversation, potentially quite controversial, and we're going to want your input. We want to hear your questions. We want to hear your thoughts, and we want to share this time with you. This is our time to share. I'm going to give you the number right now. The number to call in is 212-209-2877. Today, we're going to be speaking about cardiovascular disease, heart health, but how it extends to our entire life and our entire health. It's not just heart health. It's just not the heart muscle. In order to have heart health, our body needs to be healthy. Our mind needs to be healthy. Our adrenals need to be healthy. This is going to be explained today, and it's quite exciting. Carol, would you introduce our guest?
Yes, I'd like to introduce Dr. Tom Cohen. Tom Cohen is a physician, and I always have trouble with this word, anthroposophical. Rudolf Steiner's principles of medicine, he especially took those into consideration. He is an author. We're going to be discussing Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, one of his books. He's also written one, Cancer and the New Biology of Water, and The Contagion Myth, and a few more. He's also a farmer. And you can see some of his food-related stuff at Dr. Cohen's garden. So I'd like to read this little statement that I found on his website. He says, "It is my sincerest wish and expectation that we all will forge a new world together, a world that is clean, safe, and governed by joy instead of fear." So, Dr. Cohen, welcome to our program. And we'd like to focus in on the heart and some of the controversial things about the heart is that you have written the heart is not a pump. So welcome to our show. And would you like to start with that question?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I just need to clarify a few things. Number one, the name is Cowan, not Cohen.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Andrew, go ahead.
And number
go
two,
ahead.
I'm not actually a practicing physician anymore. I surrendered my license a few years ago. So I don't have a license to practice medicine, nor do I want one. Number three is for many, many years, I have no connection with anthroposophical medicine. So I just want to be clear about that. I don't speak for them. They don't speak for me. I have nothing to do with them, and they want nothing to do with me, and I want nothing to do with them. So I just want to be clear that I'm not speaking for and just so whatever I say is what I believe or what I think, not what anything to do with anthroposophy or anthroposophical medicine thinks. So as far as your the question was, what about, is the heart a pump, right?
Yes.
Right. So it's important whenever you have these kind of discussions to be very clear about the wording and what we're actually talking about. So what, because there are many different kinds of pumps, what I'm talking about, which is the common use of the word pump, would be better described as a pressure propulsion device, meaning in the way we learned in medical school and the way that everybody from probably grade six on up, every cardiologist, every internist, every nurse practitioner thinks, is that the heart is a muscular organ. When the muscles squeeze, that somehow pushes or generates pressure that propels the blood to move around the body. That's what I'm talking about. And the fact of the matter is that simply is not accurate. There's no truth in that at all. And so the first half of my book was describing how and why it's not possible for the heart to be a pressure propulsion device kind of pump. So just to go over that so the people are clear, there's three basic arguments for this. One is that in our bodies, we have miles and miles, thousands of miles of blood vessels. Inside the blood vessels are this viscous fluid with these cells, red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets floating around in them, which are approximately the same diameter as the capillaries, the small blood vessels. So imagine you put the blood vessels end to end, thousands of miles long, and you have this 1 pound organ that's supposedly squeezing and thereby pushing all this viscid fluid hundreds of thousands of miles long. In order to do that, it would have to generate pressures literally thousands of times higher than it actually does. So there's no possible way that a squeezing of the muscle of the left ventricle could propel that blood around the body. So that's reason number one. But it gets worse, because if you actually look at a flow diagram where you measure the speed or the velocity of the blood, you find that it's the fastest when it enters the heart and when it exits the heart. And in fact, the velocity is the same as it enters and as it exits. And then as it goes through the arteries, it gradually slows down and slows down until it gets to the capillaries, where it actually stops, which is obvious because it has to offload oxygen and food and pick up waste products, carbon dioxide. So the blood stops. And then it gets moving again at the tissue level where the muscles and organs are. Now, if you think about it, how is it possible for something to push from behind and then it pushes and goes slower and slower and slower, and then it stops and then it gets going again, and somehow all of that movement is because of that push from the left ventricle? And again, that's simply not possible. It's like the analogy that I give, it's like getting on a bus from San Francisco and you go to St. Louis and then it stops to get offload passengers and get new ones, and there's no engine in the bus. And so how are you going to get to New York City if there's no engine to get you going again in St. Louis? It simply defies logic and rational thinking. And the third and probably most compelling reason is, if you look at the outflow of the left ventricle, in other words, the blood exits the heart through the so-called aortic arch, which is shaped like a McDonald's arch, and the blood goes out of the left ventricle through the arch and then through the body. Now, imagine you put a flexible garden hose shaped like an arch on the spigot outside of your house. And then you turn it off and the arch looks like a McDonald's arch. And then you turn it on full blast because obviously you have to make a huge push to get that blood thousands of miles going. What you would expect is that the arch, if it can bend, would straighten out. That's what all liquid moving through tubes under pressure does. But I can guarantee you, and I worked in a cardiac catheterization lab, so I saw this over and over again, that during this maximum push, the arch bends in. In other words, the more you, quote, push, the more of a arch, the more the arch bends in, and that is simply not compatible with a pushing action. And so, therefore, you know that the movement of the blood out of the ventricle has to be because of suction, not from any pressure propulsion. You also know that the movement of the blood has to start where the blood stopped, which is at the capillaries. And in fact, you know, no gardener or farmer would put a pump at the bottom of a hill, at the top of the hill where the blood is moving the fast, or water is moving the fastest, pump it downhill to a pond, and then expect it to get back up to his top of the hill unless they put a pump at the pond. So we know that the pump has to be at the capillaries, at the muscles in your feet, in your liver, etc. It can't possibly be at the heart, because the blood is already moving the fastest at the heart as it enters the heart. So the bottom line is the whole thing makes no sense, and it has come about because of overly mechanical thinking and a very skewed version of what a human being and how a human being is made and how things work in a human being.
Well, I understand what you're saying. So, but I'm thinking, when I'm hearing that, I'm thinking that the blood, it's almost is moving through the capillaries, moving through the body. Maybe let's put this theory up with a slight push, but the rest
there
of the motion.
There is no push from the heart.
Okay. Well, then the rest of the motion is coming from electrical charge, almost like the magla train or a bullet train, where it's being compelled and pushed along by a positive and negative charged energy that's allowing it to move through these fine capillaries and throughout the body.
But we know exactly how and why the blood moves in the capillaries.
How?
So whenever you have, unfortunately, science says there's only three phases of matter, but with water, there's a fourth phase. It's a gel phase, and it happens whenever liquid water interfaces with hydrophilic surfaces, which includes tubes like capillaries. And what happens when you have a interaction of a tube, like a hydrophilic tube, i.e. a capillary, with water, is it forms a negatively charged lining of gel lining the capillary.
Would that be called the surfactant?
No, that is not surfactant. That's different.
Okay.
And so you get this negatively charged gel, and that separates the charges, so the positive charges go into the bulk water. They start to repel each other, and then they start moving. Now, once you get the blood moving in the capillaries, because there's a narrowing effect, just like if you have a pond, the water doesn't move very fast, but if you compress it into a smaller and smaller volume river, it will naturally speed up. So you take this wide area of the capillaries, you have this separation of charge, you have the positive charges repel each other, they get the blood moving, they keep moving and go up the venous tree because they can't go up the arterial tree because the blood is coming down, and they go faster and faster and faster until it gets to the heart. Now, what happens in the heart, it's like a damming effect. So imagine you have a water running into a dam, and there's a gate, and then you have flexible walls which expand as the water comes into the holding tank behind the dam. Now, that builds up positive pressure on the incoming side and a vacuum or negative pressure on the outgoing side. When that pressure differential is big enough, that opens the gate. The blood is propelled out of the heart. That suction, that negative pressure, sucks the aortic arch in, just like you see. And mm-hmm. the blood moves out of the left ventricle, and the walls passively contract around the outgoing blood. And that is exactly an explanation for all of the phenomena that you see. There is no pushing or pumping required.
Now, this is all really very interesting, but we have 750,000 people a year with heart attacks, and 610 of them die. So how does all this fit together? Because we want to bring it back to the individual. The whole thing is take charge of your health. We want to bring it back to the individual and how they can create a healthy system out of this incredible and very interesting science.
So what I just said has basically very little to do with what you're talking about, which is heart attacks. It has something to do with it. But the second part of my book, Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, was an exploration of why we have heart attacks. And here again, I would say the entire scientific community, and particularly now the cardiologists, are mistaken about the fundamental cause of heart attacks. So they think, and pretty much all the alternative and functional doctors, everybody out there thinks that the reason somebody has a heart attack is they have three main coronary arteries. All the blood to your heart goes through these coronary arteries. One of them gets blocked with plaque, either because of cholesterol, or some people say inflammation, or some people say a lot of other things. And the blood can't get through. And then the part downstream from that blockage dies, and that's called a heart attack. And I'm here to tell you that the second part of the book is basically an explanation of how the vast majority of heart attacks have nothing to do with any blocked artery. And so anybody who's the reason why cardiology doesn't work, the reason why bypasses and stents don't work, the reason why statin drugs don't work, and the reason why most alternative treatments don't work is all of those people think that the reason you have heart attacks is because of blocked arteries. Even though every autopsy study that's ever been done that has looked at people who died of heart attacks, how many of them actually had a blocked artery? And the numbers vary from 18% to about 78%, which means that somewhere between 20 and 82% of people who die of a heart attack, that means it's the worst, they don't even have any blockages in the artery leading to that part of the heart. So why did they die? And in fact, the biggest study ever done was an autopsy study by a guy named Giorgio Baroldi, and he found exactly 41% of people who died of a heart attack had any significant blockage in the artery leading to that part of the heart, and half of the blockages came after the heart attack, not before. That means 80% of heart attacks have no blockage before there was even a heart attack. So any therapy, stents, bypasses, roto-rooters, statin drugs, low-fat diets that are meant to clean out your arteries will predictably have no effect on the incidence or the outcomes of heart disease because that's not the problem.
Then
so what? So how do you get a heart attack? How do you get the symptoms of a heart attack?
Can you explain to us what is the problem, please?
So again, I explain this in very specific detail in my book. So first of all, the idea, you know, one of the reasons I got into this, so I was an ER doctor for many years, saw a lot of people with heart attacks and chest pain. And over again, I heard the following. So I was basically fine and I walked up a hill and then I started not feeling so good and I had a little chest pain and my wife made me go to the doctor and he did an angiogram and he said I had a 95% blockage. And then he wags his finger at him and says, if you block anymore, you're going to die of a heart attack. And I thought about that, and I said, A, if all the blood, as we were told, go to your heart, goes through these three arteries, and you have one of your arteries, or maybe more, is 95% blocked, which means you have 5% blood flow to a major area of your heart. How exactly did you walk up a hill, and how did you walk into this emergency room? How are you even alive? And then furthermore, so you mean to tell me if you block from 5% blood flow down to what, 3%, that's going to make any difference? And frankly, that makes no sense. So I started investigating, so what is the problem? The first thing is I found that well over 90% of the blood flow to the heart comes through small blood vessels called the microcirculation or capillaries. So the coronary arteries are a minor part of the heart circulation, which is why you can have, you know, essentially a major 95% blockage of one of your coronary arteries and walk up a hill, because most of the blood flow is coming through these microcirculation. The next thing I found was that if you do careful analysis of people having a heart attack, they don't actually have low PO2 levels. They don't have low oxygen levels in their tissue, unlike what we think. But what they have is elevated lactic acid levels and a decreased pH. So here is the sequence of events that happens happens basically in every instance of chest pain and heart attack. So because of either autonomic nervous system dysfunction, meaning a decreased parasympathetic tone, which we have now proven happens in over 95% of people who go on to have heart attacks, so that's essentially low parasympathetic tone. They have poor capillary blood flow, usually because of small vessel disease like diabetes. And then most importantly, they have mitochondrial dysfunction, which means they don't generate enough energy. Because they don't generate enough energy, and because they have poor capillary blood flow, and because they have a autonomic system imbalance, when they're put under stress, they switch from a aerobic respiration, oxidative phosphorylation, to something called glycolysis, which is anaerobic fermentation. So just like your leg, when your leg runs out of oxygen, it runs out of fuel, it starts doing anaerobic glycolysis, it builds up lactic acid, and you have pain and cramps in your leg. The exact same thing happens in your heart. You have pain and cramps in your heart. We call that angina. The difference between your leg and your spleen and your liver, none of which have attacks, by the way, is that those organs can stop, whereas your heart and your brain can't. So then the lactic acid continues to build up, and then you end up having necrosis or acidosis of the tissue. The acid buildup destroys a part of your heart through a process called necrosis, and that's what we call a heart attack. And every single heart attack has to go through that mechanism. And the importance of this is it turns out there is a medicine called strophanthus, which is the seed of an African vine, which specifically gets rid of lactic acid from your heart. And so it breaks this cycle and effectively prevents people from going on to have a heart attack. So if you're doing a show about what people can do, they need to protect their autonomic nervous system. They need to not be a diabetic, and they need to not build up lactic acid in their tissues by protecting their mitochondria, which means no exposure to antibiotics, no exposure to toxic electromagnetic fields, no exposure to heavy metals like aluminum and vaccines, and on, the reasons why our mitochondria die. And they need to do things that support their energy generation, because that's why people have heart attacks. It has nothing to do with blocked arteries.
One of the things I find very interesting with strophanthus is that it has wobane, which is a normal adrenal hormone. And I've worked with hormones for many years, and it's baffling to me that we pay no attention to wobane or its parasympathetic relaxing effects from our adrenals. Are we in a state as a culture right now where we're terribly sympathetic, we're terribly stressed, so we need to do things that are parasympathetic, as this would be one of many. Should we not be paying attention to the whole adrenal hormone complex and getting some balance in our lives? Strophanthus will do it. Other things will do it too, right?
I mean, right. What the problem is, you know, traditional cultures don't have heart attacks. And most of them eat high-fat diets and high animal food diets. So that obviously has nothing to do with it.
In the States?
But what they don't. But
in
what
the
they
States,
don't do.
We didn't have heart attacks before 1940, 1930. There were very almost, it was unheard of to have a heart attack.
Right. In fact, it was an interesting debate between a vegan cardiologist and another guy. And the vegan cardiologist went on this whole tirade about we never had heart attacks before 1940. And we should all eat a vegan diet to not have heart attacks. You know how many vegans there were in 1920 in the United States?
Probably
exactly.
Hardly any.
Zero. A few that belong to that Kellogg Society.
Right. So it makes no sense. So we live in a way that's not fit for human beings. We're not outside in the sun. We have no connection with animals. We have no connection with the earth. We eat toxic food. We drink toxic water. We have poor relations. We live under fear. We have all these delusional thoughts like viruses make us sick. And so we end up being afraid most of our lives. And that is a recipe for having sympathetic dominance. Now, the cardiologists know that, so they block your sympathetic nervous system with beta blockers, which only makes it worse, because there's a big difference between blocking your sympathetic nervous system versus supporting your parasympathetic.
Exactly.
And that's what we need. We need to live a life that is supportive of a human life, which means movement, sunshine, earth, animals, plants, human connection, meaningful work. You know, I could go on and on. Normal living food, good water, not taking vaccines and antibiotics and all this other poison stuff we put in. So if we're going to live like that, we're going to have heart attacks.
I'd like to just jump to
give this number.
Give the number to call it.
Enough information so you have questions. I have 100 of them right here in front of me. So the number to call is 212-209-2877. It's
2950, isn't it? For the call-in.
That's the fundraiser number.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, 212-209-2877. Let's hear your questions. You must have many. I do too. Go on, Carol. Now Carol does also.
Yes. Well, it was something I thought you wrote very beautifully in your book about animal fats, that we need the animal fats to give our body warmth.
Right.
And I thought that was so beautifully said, because without our body warmth, our whole metabolic rate, our whole functioning goes down. We don't function as optimal human beings. I think Dr. Wilson said something in his thyroid book, most of our biochemical reactions occur at their optimal rate, at our optimal body temperature. So in order to have that, we really need to have these animal fats.
Yeah, as far as I can see, there's no successful, healthy human culture that didn't eat animal foods, and in particular, animal fats. If somebody knows of one, I'd love to hear it, but as far as I can tell, they don't exist.
So you also, let's jump into the cosmic heart thing. You wrote about a lot of things about all the heart words in our culture: heartwarming, heartfelt, heart of gold, and you can go on and on and on. We put
touch
so much emphasis.
Heart.
Touch my yeah. We put so much emphasis on those words. We never apply that to other parts of our human body. Is there
heart.
A reason? Touch my foot.
The heart is the main energy center of our body. The heart is also an anagram of the word earth. So the heart and the earth are very similar. If you do an energy mapping of the human being, you find there is a toroidal field that extends out, depends on the person, but between 6 and 8 feet around the person, which is essentially like your personal space. Now, insofar as your energetic field that emanates from the heart, and it basically does so because of the water in the blood and the iron in the blood, and the fact that in the heart doesn't push anything. It creates a vortex which puts a spin on the heart, and that essentially gets the iron activated, and that creates this electromagnetic field that's shaped like a torus or a donut around the person. That field essentially acts like the symphony conductor, and all the other organs, the liver and the brain and the foot, everything, entrain on the heart. They get their direction. Otherwise, you have a liver playing Beethoven and a kidney playing Bach, and they may play their tune right, but they don't coordinate, and you end up with not something that sounds like music. So health means you have a coordinated field, and the coordinator is the heart, and that comes out of the dynamics of the heart, which is to create this toroidal field out of the vortex and the iron and the moving blood, and there's no room in there for any mechanical pump. That was an idea that a guy named René Descartes came up with, when he said that from now on, we have to see the human being as a machine and a biochemistry set, which has nothing to do with reality.
Now, I would like to ask you, because I've seen many things on the internet about vegetables and how important vegetables are. And we know that eating a variety of vegetables is very alkaline, and what you're talking about is this spasm that we have, or this reaction that we have, whatever we want to call it, is acidic, and it creates lactic acid, and the body needs to clean that out or move it through. So can you explain to us your relationship to vegetables and why they're so important to our overall health, but also our heart health?
So first of all, that you described, you know, that vegetables are alkaline, so it helps neutralize the acidity. That to me is a myth. That what I'm talking about is the buildup of acidity in the heart tissue specifically, but anywhere in the body, has nothing to do with the acid alkaline nature of the food that you're eating. It has to do with mitochondrial function. If your mitochondria are sick, and the main reasons they get sick are basically antibiotic use, toxic metals like aluminum and mercury and lead, and electromagnetic field poisoning. Those are the three main reasons. Once that happens, then you can't respire normally. You can't use oxygen normally. So you go anaerobic and use glycolysis, and that builds up lactic acid and causes you to be metabolically acidic. Again, that has nothing to do with the alkalinity or the acidity of the food that you eat. Now, as far as vegetables, I do like eating vegetables. I'm an avid gardener. My understanding is that healthy traditional people eat up to 100 to 150 different plants per year, whereas Americans eat maybe 10, and that includes French fries and ketchup. And that's not to say that you don't need animal fats as well, but the vegetables provide different sort of phytonutrients, plant compounds, which the plants use to fight disease and we use to fight illness as well. So they have certain minerals, they have certain energies, they have certain chemicals in them. So I figure, I don't know which ones I need, but if I eat 110 of them in the year, I'll probably get something that I need out of that. And so that's been my strategy.
Oh, that's wonderful. You also wrote about when you're growing your food, about growing different vegetables together rather than like monoculture. I guess we have a lot of monoculture in our farming methods. But that vegetables do better in the presence of other vegetables, not all of them the same.
As do every other living being.
Just...
but the real principle here, if you look at food, if you want to talk about that for a minute, if you want to get to the basic problem with food, is if you look at an acre of, say, Kansas prairie in 1900, and you said, you did a snapshot and said, how many nutrients are in this acre? Now you're talking about wild grasses and buffalo and rabbits and seeds and maybe nuts and herbs and all kinds of things. And then you compare that with 2020, and that's now an acre of corn. Every single nutrient in that field, fats, proteins, molybdenum, zinc, calcium, iron, everything was higher in 1900 with the exception of one, and that's sugar. So essentially what we have done with our agriculture is we used to grow nutrients, and now we grow sugar. And so everybody gets diabetes and heart disease because that diabetes interferes with your capillary small vessel blood flow. So basically people have substituted, with every food they eat. They used to eat wild mustard greens and now they eat broccoli. Wild mustard greens has much more minerals and phytochemicals because the plant has to survive in the wild. Whereas broccoli, it's, you know, hard to grow. Not that I have anything against broccoli, but it's too sweet and it's been bread to taste good so people will eat it, just like apples compared to crab apples and wild grapes compared to, and so essentially we've become not Homo sapiens, but a word that I love to, I didn't make it up, but We are now officially Homo domesticus fragilis. Domesticus people.
Delicately. Uh-huh.
Yes. So we simply aren't getting the nutrient. I read a wonderful book, Soil, Grass, and Cancer, from right. about the mid-century, and it's exactly as you're saying. We have lost all our ability to grow healthy food because soil is also unhealthy. And what do? We poison our farmland with insecticides, pesticides, glyphosate, and it's astounding that we consider, as a society, that we consider this is okay. Why aren't we rising up and really reclaiming our farmland, for instance? I for a long time thought that we should cut up those large agricultural acreages and recreate biodynamic farming and small family farms again to restore our soil.
Right, as long as they do it properly, because a society can't live that behaves towards their soil like we do. The soil is the basis of our health, and if you, as you say, put poisons and glyphosate and, you know, till it every year, that you will turn the soil, even organic agriculture. If you think about Kansas, they had 12 feet deep topsoil in 1900, and then with organic-only agriculture, 1940, the whole thing blew away to the Gulf of Mexico when they had the Dust Bowl, because they kept tilling the soil over and over again, growing wheat and corn and you know, that sort of stuff. So this is madness. You can't, a culture, a society cannot live like that. And so then you have mitochondrial defects. You don't have enough nutrients. You end up with weak, domesticated, fragile people. And they have heart attacks. I mean, what do you expect?
Under stress. When they're under stress, they have heart attacks.
Anybody who's nutritionally depleted is thereby, by definition, under stress.
We have a caller on the line. And I want to say hello. Welcome. You're on WBAI. Your name, please?
Hi. I'm from Jersey.
Hi, Jersey.
I'm so thankful that there's a guy talking about what it needs to be talking about. I'm thinking I need to go see my chiropractor, and I didn't want to leave because the phone is next to the radio. I turned it down. What's the name
of
the book?
You know what? I can't really. You need to speak up, please.
What's the name of the book?
Human Heart, Cosmic Heart.
Thank you. Thank you. I was, he kept saying, I wrote this book. And you guys said, well, tell us what it says. I know I have to.
We
read.
Are. and it has a broad spectrum of information, very specific from the physiology of the body and the physiology of the heart, all the way down explaining why it's so important to eat well. So it's a broad, incredible spectrum of information. And it's called Human Heart, Cosmic Heart. Dr.
Cosmic
Thomas
Heart. Oh,
Cowan.
Who wrote it?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Dr. Cowan, would you like to discuss what kind of water you should be drinking? And you're speaking about the heart as a vortex. It also reminds me of real free water should have a vortex too.
So the principles of water are water is basically, water should not have toxic stuff in it. That's number one. What do I mean by that? You know, all municipal water supplies have pharmaceuticals, they have chlorine, chloramines, they have all kind of cleaning agents, they are a toxic brew of I don't know how many different chemicals. So none of those, all of those things undermine your health. So the first step is to, not expose yourself to the toxic chemicals in water. Now there's two ways of doing that. One, either find a spring. And when I say spring, I mean a place where the water emerges from the ground of its own accord, not pumped up through a well. And these, it should be what's called primary water, and I don't want to get into what primary water is, but many places around the world and country and pretty much every community has these springs that are basically clean primary water. Water emerges, that emerges out of its own power from the earth. If you don't have that, then if whatever water you have to get rid of all the toxic elements in the water. That's the first step. But now if you're doing that, if you have primary water, you don't have to do anything except collect it. If you have any other kind of water, first you have to get rid of the impurities, and then you have to remineralize it, and there's specific companies that help you do that. And then you have to put it through some vortex or what's called an implosion device that brings the energy and the life back into the water. And there's a lot of companies that do that. We work with some of them. One is called AliveWater.com that you can put into your whole house after your filter. Then you put this pipe in it, and it's a copper pipe, and it makes the water go in these vortex shapes, because all healthy water in nature is moving continuously in vortex patterns, just like all the water in our body called blood is moving in these vortex patterns. That's what happens in the heart. The blood in your arteries and veins is also moving in a vortex. Otherwise, it wouldn't move properly. It would get sort of stuck. And so you have to recreate that. So there's various ways of doing that. If people go to our drtomcowan.com, you'll see different devices that will help you purify, mineralize, and then restructure your water.
So this has been very, very informative. I think we opened up many, many, many questions and gave some answers. We've come close to the end of the hour. We've got a couple of minutes left, about 2 minutes. Dr. Cowan, is there something you want to leave with the audience, an understanding that you'd like to share with them that would be important for them to understand for their health?
The most important thing right now for every human being who's alive and wants to live a free and healthy life is to understand that you cannot believe anything coming out of any so-called authoritative source about anything to do with science, medicine, or health, including me, I would say. In other words, if I say, which I have said, pathogenic, i.e. disease-causing viruses, simply don't exist. There is no evidence that such an entity actually exists. Now, I would not take my word for it, but before you dismiss that or say that I'm wrong, you need to know by yourself how a virologist or a scientist came to the conclusion that such an entity actually exists. Now, I know the exact steps. If you don't know the exact steps, and I would guess that 99% of your listeners don't, then I would say you're not qualified to have an opinion about this matter. You may think you know. You may think, well, I got sick. That proves it's a virus. But that is laughably ignorant. So in order to be a healthy person now, whenever they say heart attacks are caused by blocked arteries, you need to know who came up with that, when did they come up with that, and what was their evidence that they came up with that. If they say that DNA is the chemical of heredity, which I would say it isn't, then you need to know, before you say I'm wrong, who came up with that, how did they come up with that, what was their evidence, and does that evidence actually prove what they say it does? Because at this point, I can tell you, people say, well, Tom, how come you think so many things in science and medicine are wrong? And I flip that question over and say, I can hardly think of anything in science and medicine that's right. The reason
you know
is
what?
They have no conception of life. They actually think there's no such thing as life. So they study living beings as if they were dead.
Yep.
And you that's the problem.
You're tough. You're tough. But at the same time, I know you work with the Weston Price Foundation that works with people and explains to people about health and their health and teaches them about food and how to eat better and how to have a healthier life and does a lot of research and work. I know you work with them. You've co-authored a book with Sally Fallon, and we had her on our show many, many years ago, probably 18 years ago, and when Nourishing Traditions was just published. But I really want to thank you very much. I love your input. I love your inquiry. And I think we all need to be a little more curious and questioning more rather than just walk around and accept it all. And in that process, create a better life for ourselves, our families, and our communities. So thank you, Dr. Cowan.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the gift of your time and some of your thoughts. And I love that you question everything.
Me too. Boy, I thought I questioned. Thank you again.
Goodbye.
Next week.
Okay.
We'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion.